Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. I am super excited today about our guest. I use his software every single day. I'm a huge fan of their software. And we're going to learn today more about marketing on LinkedIn and social media. And today we have with us Tom Jackson from Paris, which is also cool, who is one of the co-founders of Taplio, who has a really cool product for posting on LinkedIn. Before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. If we can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and we have all the tools to help you manage that team, please visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Tom, welcome to the show, man. I'm a fanboy. I'm so excited. So,
thank you, Matt. Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
So I guess my first question for you is, how in the world did you get into this? Like, how did you? So you also have a company called Tweet Hunter, which I guess is a weird name for it now. Should it be like X Hunter or something?
But yeah, we're debating about it.
So I think 99% of the users still will always call it Tweets and Twitter, though. But tell us, how did you get into this with both the Tweeter and LinkedIn?
Yeah. So actually, Twitter came first. What happened was I left my job and I wanted to build a startup again with my former co-founder, because we had built a business together a few years back. Like, now it's nearly 10 years back, which is astonishing to me. And so I left my job in 2021, like early 2021, and we started working on, like, we wanted to focus on how founders, entrepreneurs can get more clients, basically, because we were seeing, like, the barrier to build a product had decreased significantly with no code and whatever, like, all these techs. And so we thought, okay, well, there's going to be a surge in products and there's not going to be a surge in consumers. So how do we help founders and entrepreneurs, like, actually market their product and find customers? And so we built, like, our approach was, like, that's, like, the problem we wanted to solve. And the approach was, we want to, like, basically create as many products as we can, validate them or not as fast as we can, and finally find one that sticks, you know. So I don't know what the saying is in English, but, like, you know, throw 10 things at the wall and one is going to stick or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, like, most definitely what we set out to do. And it turned out that as we were creating products, my co-founder had, like, I don't know, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 Twitter followers.
Okay.
And every single time we released a new product, he managed to get, like, a couple sales, like maybe 3, 4, 5 sales from his Twitter account. And that was astonishing to me. And so I thought, okay, well, I have to build a Twitter following too. And I sucked at it. I was very bad at it. And at that time, my co-founder was playing around with like basically a tweet database he had made, trying to build products using that database. And I don't know who exactly got the idea, but basically we thought, okay, well, we could use that database to like analyze what's working on Twitter and show the appropriate tweets for just about any topic to our users. So like, if you you want to post about marketing, you just like, it was kind of a Google for tweets. You would just type in marketing, and you would get a bunch of viral tweets about marketing, basically. And so that's what we did. It turned out that this was the product that sticked. It did solve a real problem, and then it evolved into a more complex problem product that contained scheduling, AI, some automations, etc. And then that became we created a LinkedIn version, which is called Taplio. Because like it's basically the same exact problem with a different audience, a different platform. And yeah, that's how everything came to be.
So you had a lot of success with Tweet Hunter, but I'm really interested about some of the other things that you tried that didn't work, like before Tweet Hunter through this process. So did you guys create three or four other things? How did that go?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact number, but it was a lot. I would say maybe more than four or five, like maybe six to eight. Our approach was basically like 1 week. In 1 week, we have to build and start distributing the product. And if after a week, we're not making any sales, we dump it and move on to something else.
That doesn't seem long enough, though, to really accomplish anything.
Yeah, I think we did it like we did it like hard mode on, you know. I think it came from our previous experience where we had built a startup. We were like in stealth mode for 6 months.
Right.
Then we released. Then we raised funds. Then we rebuilt the entire thing, and it ended up being a failure. Like we learned a lot from it, etc. But it did fail after a couple of years. And we thought, well, this is never going to happen to us ever again. And so, yeah, we did it. Like we were very intense about it, to be honest. Like I don't know if, and it comes with being two founders as well. Like one who knows how to market, one who knows how to code.
Yeah,
that helps in going faster, basically.
So you guys took the fail fast to the extreme. Any concerns that some of those other ideas might have been great, but you just didn't give them quite enough time to breathe and come to fruition?
I'm sure we made that mistake. Like I'm sure that like at least half of the projects we abandoned could have been great companies, great products, etc. It wasn't really, but I have like there. Well, I have no regrets in part because the ones we picked ended up working. But like, I really think it was still the right approach for us. I don't know, like if you, it's tough enough to launch a business. So you want to see those great things happening right from the start. Like you need these like positive things as quickly as you can. And so we really didn't want to be like working on for several months on something that might fail. No regrets, but yeah, you're right. Like there's definitely a few of these ideas that probably could have been great products.
So on the Tweet Hunter side, you talked before about it helps people figure out like what content to write, helps them with scheduling and all this kind of stuff, which is really great. But how did you figure out like quickly that was going to be successful? You know, it was your co-founder posting about it on Twitter and just a lot of people clamored for it. How did you quickly kind of validate that?
So in terms of distribution, it was mainly my co-founder's Twitter and Reddit. We used a few like subreddits, posted in them in these subgroups, and like we had these definitely very ugly videos to showcase in those groups, but they did pretty well. So we managed to get traffic on the website pretty quickly. But to be honest, that was also the case for the previous products we were launching. We found these scrappy ways of bringing traffic to the website. And the way we validated Tree Hunter over all the other ones is that we just made a bunch more sales than we did with the previous ones. So like the first few was like over the course of 2 to 3, 4 days, we were making like 3 to 5 sales. And this one we made like 30. And so we're like, yeah. Okay, this is going well. And after a month, like maybe a bit less, we were at 1K recurring revenue monthly. So that was already like amazing. Like the feeling you get from having like being able to pay your server bills and like a couple ads is amazing.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it just felt like obvious it was going to work. Like there were no doubt in our mind that it was going to work.
So how long did you continue down the path for Tweet Hunter before you guys decide to add basically a whole second product on the Taplio side for LinkedIn? How long did you wait to do that?
So not very long. Like I think that 3 or 4 months in, my co-founder started to dev a LinkedIn version, but it was it was filled with bugs. It wasn't like we didn't have a name for it. We didn't have a distribution channel for it. We weren't sure what to do with it. He just like coded that on the weekends, basically. And I think we really launched it in May 2022 or April maybe. But yeah, so overall, a year more or less between the first product and the second one being launched. But we actually started developing it pretty fast after a couple of months.
Okay. So on the Twitter side, I mean, there are a lot of different Twitter tools out there, right? That post stuff to Twitter. So when you guys started this, what was it that you were doing that made your product unique versus using, you know, TweetDeck and like, there's a thousand, but it seems like 1,000 other Twitter related tools.
Well,
what was it that made you guys so unique?
There's less now because now you have to pay 40K a month to Twitter to be part of their API partners. But yeah, so what made us different was we never set out to build a tweet scheduler, basically. The idea of adding that feature came from our users who were asking for it, but initially, we were just like an inspiration engine, kind of. So we weren't like any other tool. There weren't other tools, actually. Like there were these people who shared like tweet collections or swipe files or stuff like that. There were ghostwriters. There were people selling resources to learn how to tweet. But there were no tool. There wasn't any tool. So this is what made us different from all the others right from the start, is that we actually set out to tackle the problem quite differently. Some people just wanted to schedule tweets, and there were tens or hundreds of tools for that, but nobody was doing content inspiration, basically.
Yeah. Well, so were you guys using AI to help do this before ChatGPT became available, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like over a year before.
And so from the Taplio side, I don't use Tweet Hunter, honestly. I use Taplio.
Yeah.
But on the Taplio side, you now use ChatGPT, right? So as soon as ChatGPT came out, did you guys kind of immediately jump on that and kind of go through like a several week or month process of trying to figure out how to switch things around?
Yeah, that's basically it. So there was kind of a legislation thing, like something about the terms of services that we had to tackle, which is that initially we built our AI features on GPT-3, so the previous version. And one day we discovered that in their terms and conditions, they did not authorize social media content production.
Oh.
And so we had to switch to something else. And it was pretty good actually, because we were able to like feed it a lot of post examples. And so the AI wasn't bad, but it was definitely less good than GPT-4, which came out like what, less than a year ago, like in maybe January of last year, or I don't know, somewhere around that. Not of last year, I mean like end of 2022, beginning 2023. And yeah, when it came out, it became obvious that if we wanted to stay relevant, we needed to make the switch. And in the meantime, everything related to social media content had disappeared from the terms of services, so we were allowed to do it. And we thought, well, this is great, let's go. And it took us like maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks to move from the previous tech to the new one, but we did it progressively. So like after a week, we had one feature using the
yes,
before, et cetera. We rolled it out progressively.
So tell me a little more about who your guys' target users are, and let's talk about using the tool and the value of the tool a little more. Because so I guess first, let me say how I use it. So I have like 27,000 followers on LinkedIn. I post on LinkedIn almost every day. And, you know, I kind of how we started the conversation, it's pretty easy to start a business, but it's super hard to market it. Marketing is always very hard. And I definitely believe that for a lot of smaller companies, like you are the brand, like as a founder, shameless self-promotion and self-branding and all that stuff is really important. And I've had a lot of success on LinkedIn myself from using LinkedIn and stuff. But I'm curious, how do you see your guys' users using it and the success they have, you know, case studies and that kind of stuff? Love to hear your side of it.
Yeah. So I would say like, I don't have any definitive stats, but from what I can see overall when I do tickets or when I go into the database, most of our users, I would call them prosumers. For the most part, they are solo business people. So they are freelancers, okay, founders, solopreneurs, creators, whatever you want to call them. They're a one-person business, basically.
Okay.
And that's for like 90% of them are like this. A few are agencies doing that kind of work for solopreneurs. And a few are SMBs. So yeah, like people like the sales guy in the company is using Tapio or stuff like that. In terms of how they use it, they use it for two things mainly. One is like creating content and scheduling it, which is pretty, I mean, of course, this is what we sell. The other way they use it is for engaging with other accounts. So that's something, especially at the beginning. I think someone on your podcast talked about it as well. They have a kind of a different tool, but that allows that as well.
Yes.
And it like basically engaging with other people on LinkedIn is crucial. When you just post at the beginning, it's likely you're not going to get many impressions, like even if the post is great. And so we help you do that as well, like identify the right people, and fetch their posts and reply to their posts. And the last way people are, I would say, unfortunately, not really using the product despite what it can do, is the whole lead generation aspect of the product. So this is something that, like, if you were to ask me what are my challenges for the next few months, you know, like this would be it. It would be to better explain the value of our lead identification and nurturing features and position Tapio as more of an all-in-one tool and not just something for content and engaging, but also we're not a fully automated tool. Like we don't do automated invites or stuff like that, but we do have some pretty original ways of identifying people who might be interested in your products and reaching out to them. And this is something that I think is being not used enough by our users. They don't see us as that type of product, even though we are.
Well, I think as other entrepreneurs, and I think humans in general, we're always looking for the easy button, right? We think there's some automated magical system that just works and then money rains down, right? But it doesn't really work that way. And the more you're in business, you actually come to appreciate like simple things that if you do them every single day, become kind of fundamental, and you get good at doing those simple things that yield results, right? And I think LinkedIn is absolutely one of those things. If you spend 10, 20, 30 minutes a day, whatever it is, posting content, commenting on other people's content, and just do a little bit of every day, it absolutely works. And I've been doing it almost every day for the last year or so. And I get people all the time that will tell me, they're like, Matt, I like your content, been following you for a long time, blah, blah, blah. Like I hear that a lot, which is always great and reassuring to the work that goes into it. But it's also helped grow our business. I mean, we get leads from it, and it absolutely works. But the point is, there's no easy button. You have to do the work, and your guys' tool helps a lot of making it easier to do the work.
And I mean, what you're saying is only logical. Like if you put yourself in LinkedIn's shoes or Twitter's shoes, what do they want? They want people who are active on the platform. So they're going to be, yeah. Their algorithm is obviously going to reward people who have been active for a while, and they're going to push your content more as you become a predominant contributor to the platform. So if you're going to do it for a week and you see no results, well, that's actually like normal. You should at least give it a few months before you see like really tangible results. And there are always exceptions. Like we have users that came from 1,000 followers and grew to hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
But these are exceptions. Like it's not what everybody's gonna get. Our product is not the only factor that is gonna turn you from 1,000 to 100,000, basically. I just wanted to stress the point that platforms want you to be consistent, basically. That's what they want.
Right.
And they'll reward you for it.
Well, I'm curious, what is it like having a startup in Paris? What is it like being an entrepreneur in Paris?
So actually, it's funny because you said I was from Paris, but I actually live in Bordeaux, which is in the southwest of France.
Okay.
Our company got acquired by a startup which is based in Paris.
Okay.
And my co-founder was living in Bali first, then in the Alps, and then in Paris now. So we're kind of like spread all around the world, like not only France, basically, like the team is kind of everywhere. But to tell you what it's like, there's two kind of sub questions. One is how is it to have a remote team which is spread out everywhere? And personally, I love it. It's zero meetings, basically. Like I do maybe one meeting per week. I talk to my co-founder live maybe once every other week. And that's how we like to function. Basically, we're very into being operational and executing what we want to be doing, and we're not that much into reporting, measuring, strategizing. As you can tell by how we actually started our business, which is we went like head on towards towards the problem, and like that's just how we operate. And then there's like, how is it to build a startup in France? And I think like this country is just amazing if you want to build a business. And few people realize it because we have this image of France being like a country where everybody goes on strike and taxes are super high. But like the amount of help we get from our government to be able to launch businesses is incredible. Like we have unemployment benefits that last a long time and that are decent enough to be able to pay your bills, basically. You've got all kinds of subsidies and ways to have like free money, which is not something that we leveraged this time, but it still exists for those who have like, I would say, more complicated projects to build. So it's an amazing country to build a company for sure.
So when you guys started this, your co-founder was the main software developer. Did you guys use other local software developers in France, or how did you do that part of it?
So he was like not even in, he's French, but he was in Bali basically, or Thailand, was it? I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
And like he, I don't know, after 6 months, we had the money to pay an extra engineer. But we didn't have enough money to pay someone from the US or even from France. So we hired someone from India who's super competent. He's still with us today. He's amazing. And we've, like, over time, we've added people to our team who are, some of them are also based in India, and some of them are based in France now. But we, like, everybody works in English. Everybody understands themselves. It's very smooth. That's great.
Yeah, and that's very similar to what we do at Fullscale. You know, we have 300 employees in the Philippines to do software development for other people. That's what my business is, and that's what I use LinkedIn to talk about every day.
Yeah.
is our company Fullscale. That's what we do. We do software development for other people. So, you know, there's amazing talent everywhere, and that's the problem is software development can be incredibly expensive. But 90% of software developers are not in the United States, and you know, to your own testament, it's like, you know, you have to find the talent where you can afford it. And, there's a lot of talent everywhere that is potentially, you know, more affordable that still can get the work done. And so good for you guys of figuring it out. And so speaking of that, I forgot about this. You guys already sold this thing. So how, when did you start this? And then you sold it just a couple months ago or something.
A bit more than that.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So we launched Tweet Hunter, our first product, let's say in May 2021. And we sold it about 18 months later, basically. So end of 2022. So it took a little over a year. That was quite... That was super fast, just as fast as we develop products, we sell them. So basically we sold to a company that's called Lempire. They're most known for being the people who built Lemlist, which is a cold email outreach tool. So it makes kind of a lot of sense because we come before people start using their software. You know, we're there when people want to build up a following, build up leads, basically, and they come in at the second step, which is, well, how do you contact those leads? How do you nurture them? How do you convert them into clients? So it made a lot of sense. And I think they also saw in us, like they were seeing that AI was going to be like probably a bigger thing than NFTs, you know? And so they wanted to have people who had the experience of building products that contain AI. And plus it's a French company. So it might not sound like a very big deal, but it actually kind of is, both in terms of culture fit. I would say like we're very much, I don't know if I should say this, but like American in our way of thinking about business, which is that we're doing this to grow, to make money, to be fast and efficient. Being French, and being able to have, to be very precise when you're talking to someone you work closely with, is still a huge asset. Like having all this culture fit is really important. And it's also important, like tax-wise, because if you get bought by a company, let's say an American company, and you're based in Europe, they're only going to want to buy your assets, and not the company itself, because they're going to be super scared of having to deal with the French administration or something. Because there's like, yeah, you know, all these stereotypes, but yeah, and so. Tax-wise, that actually changes a lot of things because it's not you that's making the money, it's your company. And then the company gives you that money. And there's a whole tax process in between, which is that you first have to pay your company's taxes. and then your own taxes. Whereas if you sell in the same country, well, at least if you sell the actual company, then you get the money directly.
It's a small thing, but yeah. What led you guys to sell so fast, though? I mean, it sounds like you were a year into this, several months into this, and already talking to them potentially about selling. You feel like you were able to maximize the value out of it, or you kind of sold it too soon? What was the thought?
So I don't know. I don't think we maximized the value, but also due to how the economy is right now, I'm not sure that we would have gotten that much more for it if we had sold later on. So, by that I mean that I don't really regret it. And there's another thing, which is that neither my co-founder or me consider ourselves to be people who are going to build a 50 or 100 or 1,000 person company. I'm not a manager. I'm a very poor manager. I don't want to be one. And I have no interest in acquiring the skills to become a good manager and a good CEO, et cetera. So I think selling was also selling particularly to them who had done the work of scaling their company to 10, then 20 million ARR. We were giving our baby to people who know what they're doing, basically. I don't know if we would have managed to scale it to 20 million ARR ourselves. I'm not sure we have the skill set for that. We're very happy to have sold, and I think everybody wins.
So what are you doing now? Are you still with Limpire as part of the team, or did you move on to do something else?
No, I'm still very much with Limpire. I'm still working on Tapio and Tree Hunter full time. We have a contract basically with an earnout clause, etc. And so I know that I'm going to be there at least until August of next year. And if we can find a deal to make it go even further, then that's great. And if not, then I'll probably create something else.
I went through that process myself when my first company sold. We had an earnout until the end of the year, the end of December. And so I went and talked to my business partner after Thanksgiving and told him, if we sign up any new accounts, we don't see the revenue till January. If somebody cancels, we don't lose the revenue till January. So it's our earnout is up. What are we doing next? And at that time, I had the idea to start another company. And I told him, I don't even know how long do I have to stay here. They gave us a ton of money to do this, and whatever I got to do, I'll do it. And I'll never forget, he just looked at me. He's like, Matt, they abolished slavery a long time ago. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. And they don't want you walking around like a zombie every day. They know they handed you a big pile of cash. If you want to leave, you can leave. And so I was out of there. I left immediately. I was ready to do something different. And for me, it had been eight or 9 years of doing the same thing. So that was my earnout story.
Yeah, for me, it's a bit different. One, I haven't been working on this that long, so I'm not tired of it yet. And also, to be honest, the relationship we have with them is pretty great. We get help when we want to be helped, and we get freedom and space when we need space and freedom. So it's a pretty sweet deal. They've been very respectful of the deal we had, and also of the overall idea of the deal, even though we can't put it in legal terms, you're going to get freedom to do what you want. It was kind of it was a discussion we had before the deal, and they've been very respectful of it. So for now, everything's going pretty sweet.
A lot of times those deals don't go very smoothly. I've sold a couple different companies, and neither one of them went super smooth after acquisition, as far as getting the support you needed, and they all of a sudden want to distract you with all sorts of bullshit that didn't matter, and all the different things. Has there been some things you didn't expect as far as post acquisition? You're like, now I got to do all these things, or the, you know, things they didn't do, they promised to do. Like, how did that really work out for you?
Like, all promises that were made were held. That's for sure.
Awesome.
Something that I mentioned it earlier, like, I'm not someone who likes meetings and reportings and stuff like that. And
yeah.
So for that, we kind of found a balance, over time. So I'm not part of most meetings, but I'm part of the regular important ones. I give the important news about what we're doing. But there's no hardcore reporting dashboard.
Nice.
Like 5 meetings a week, et cetera. So in an ideal world, I would be doing none of that. And maybe they would have me do more reporting and more meetings. But we found, I think, what's a good balance and what's fair to everyone, which is,
I'm
invested
awesome.
In the company. I want them to succeed. So I'm part of it. But also I'm not part of it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week into meetings and having half my salary go into me spending time in meetings, basically.
So you guys have well, so let me ask you this. I really want to ask you about Elon Musk, Twitter, the API. How much did you guys know about him shutting down the API and charging these crazy fees? Like, walk us through how that happened from your guys' perspective, because obviously that had to be a major, punch in the gut to you guys.
Yeah. So I think it was early April of this year. We woke up one morning. We had heard rumors about the API becoming very expensive, but we weren't contacted by anyone at Twitter to tell us. We didn't receive any official email telling us, we're going to switch, go on this form to sign up or whatever. Or actually, now that I remember, we did get an email and we did sign up on a weird, it felt like web 1.0 form where we just said, this is us. We want access.
Some survey.
And then one day, one day we woke up and I woke up, I looked at my phone, saw the Slack notifications from some of our teammates in India, who were up for a while. And it turns out that at 5 a.m. in the morning, we had gotten an email telling us our app was suspended from using the API. That's how it went. So.
And at that moment, you guys are basically out of business, right? I mean, at that moment.
Yeah, at that moment, that's 3/4 of our business that's going away.
Yeah.
So that was nice. So what happened next? First of all, we panicked. Then we tried to reach people at Twitter. We didn't manage to get anyone. Then we started building other apps, a second and a third app to access the API, which we were able to do. So we had all our users switch to a new app. The authorization process, et cetera, that kind of stuff. And then we had one of our competitors who, for an unknown reason, was still working properly. They started advertising to our users that they should come and use them. They would get a discount, et cetera. So there was this whole drama on Twitter. And then we, my co-founder, I think, had someone who knew someone at Twitter. And so we got put into contact and our app was back up within 24 hours of after it first got taken down. So it only lasted 24 or maybe 48 hours. But it was super intense. It's those times you're kind of happy that you sold, because that was one time I was pretty happy to have sold, because not that I want anything bad to happen to Tree Hunter now, but at least I had a part of the check,
Yeah.
And so I wasn't left with nothing. I think if we hadn't sold, I would probably have gone to therapy after that.
Well, so But so you guys are back online 48 hours later, but you still got to pay $40,000 a month, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm going to guess that's something, you know, you don't go back to Limpire and be like, oh, by the way, 40 grand. Like,
well, the thing is, you kind of have to. And like, we're lucky enough that our business, like Tweet Hunter, is making significantly more than that amount. So we can afford it. But yeah, it's still kind of a dent in the P&L, you know?
It's crazy.
Like, basically, you just get $500,000 a year taken from your P&L. That's crazy.
So has it changed?
No, it's still the same. For me, what's changed and what I find is really unfair is that we were so lucky to be able to build our company when the API was free or almost free, you know, like $50.
Yeah.
And now, like, that's kind of what I'm worried about for Twitter, is that there's not going to be that developer community building products around Twitter anymore. And the only ones that remain are the ones who existed and were already making good money. It could sound like, in a way, it's kind of a good thing for us because there's less competition. But also, it makes Twitter a slightly less vibrant space to operate. Like, there's less innovation. There's less, like, it's being compensated by the fact that Elon Musk is and the Twitter team are adding a lot of features compared to what was being done before. But in terms of like people building on top of Twitter, it's kind of, yeah, it's going away basically. So I don't know. Like, I wonder sometimes about the future of Twitter. I'm not so sure.
So tell me, what are your guys' thoughts about other social networks? So you have like Threads from Meta now, and you have Mastodon, and you have all these other things. Do you guys have plans to support other platforms too?
I don't think so. I don't see, like, unless we see a particularly robust tool with a large user base, I don't think we're going to be developing anything for those tools. When it comes to Threads, I tried it. I was actually pretty excited about it because Twitter is kind of weird. It's a weird platform. Like, there's all kinds of people on Twitter. And I thought Threads was maybe a good opportunity to build something like Twitter, but for I don't know, less controversial or confrontational people. And it turns out that without that controversy and without that honesty and freedom of speech, it's quite lame. Like, the content on it is, I find it extremely bad.
Okay.
Extremely, how do you say, I can't remember the name, but basically, like, it's very, like, it's
generic,
not
kind of very,
it's
just, generic.
It's,
yeah,
basic and boring and yeah. And so I don't feel threatened. Like, I don't think Twitter is at all threatened by Threads. And Mastodon, I haven't really, like, given it much attention because I find it still complicated for a regular person to join the platform. Like, there's this whole server thing. For now, I don't think it's a threat either. Like, I think the only threat to Twitter is LinkedIn and vice versa.
Well, so tell me this. I don't want to call myself an expert on LinkedIn marketing, but, you know, I've been doing it for a while and I feel like I know what I'm doing. But for those who are listening that want to do it, obviously a tool like Taplio is very helpful, not only from a scheduling perspective, which is what I use it for the most, but also for getting ideas, suggested topics, all this kind of stuff is really great. But do you guys have like a lot of blog content or resources for people to learn about like how to do this kind of stuff as well? Is your website like a really good resource for that people should check out?
So yeah, so we have our / resources and our / blog URLs basically, and there's a lot of content on it. We we are currently like restructuring the way we want to present those pages because it doesn't really feel like a content hub for now. It feels more like a succession of blog posts, sorted by publish date, you know? And so it's not extremely helpful currently. However, we do send a lot of emails upon signing up to Taplio. We have very in-depth emails about LinkedIn. We have a newsletter which goes out every week, which is written by Roxana, who's a head of marketing at Lempire. And she's got 30, 40, 50K followers. I can't remember exactly, but she's got a good following and she's got really good tips. I think we teach our users and our website visitors how to do it. And of course it's always evolving. And that's what's most interesting about it is there's always this new thing, this new trick or there's this new tactic that you can exploit, but they're always temporary. So what I try to do in the emails we send out is to be very evergreen in terms of the advice we give. And then we try to stay up to date in terms of the short-term tactics that people can leverage.
Awesome. Well, I do remind everybody, if you need to hire software engineers, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you manage and find a team of experts. We specialize in building a long-term team that works only for you. We have over 300 employees and, I use LinkedIn every day to talk about that. And I really appreciate you so much for being on the podcast today. Feel like a little bit of a fanboy because I use your guys' tool every day. So it's been fun. As we round out the show, do you have any other tips for other entrepreneurs out there about, you know, using LinkedIn or just starting a business or any kind of tip?
I think one of the questions I get asked the most is personal brand versus company brand or personal page profile versus company page. Do not do the company page. Do not put like all your energy in that. And there's quite a bunch of reasons for it, but I think there's two main ones. One is people want to talk with people. So if you want to start using LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever platform to get customers, you have to be a person because like people are going to listen to other people. If they see a logo and whatever, they're just going to get bored immediately, even though it might be a very similar content. You know? And the second reason is a personal brand is always going to belong to you. A personal brand is your asset. It doesn't belong to a company that you build, a product that you build. You can always have it evolve over time. And when you start early during maybe your first business or even as an employee or a freelancer, to build a personal brand, well, this is going to, you're developing an audience that's going to serve you for decades, potentially.
Yeah.
And so it's a very long-term asset. So treat it as a long-term asset, be consistent, and make sure you own it. I think those are the best tips for, why you should build a personal brand and focus less on company brands, basically.
That's fantastic advice. And one day I was watching a TikTok video and I don't remember where it came from, but somebody said that you need to focus on being the best known for what you do and not the best at what you do. And goes right back to that, right? It's being best known and having that brand. Even if you're not like the best there is or whatever it is, the people who are the most successful are the best known. People have to know who you are, and that's super important. And tools like yours are critical for helping people achieve that. So
thanks, Matt.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being on the show. Again, this was Tom Jackson with Taplio, part of Lempire and Tweet Hunter and whole suite of things that they do. Can definitely find more about them online at taplio.com, Tweet Hunter, Lempire.com. Tom, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really, really appreciate it. And this was a super fun episode.
Thank you, Matt. I had a good time as well.
Thank you.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.